If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
A very good evening and welcome to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. Nice start. We have some gesticulation going on, which nobody else can see, but it was from Guy Barlow.
Jamie O'Hara's on the TV.
Saying hello to Jamie O'Hara in his own special way.
It's we've true to form for Guy.
We've got Cam and we've got George in the studio this evening. And it's been a few weeks since I've seen you, Guy and Cam, George, introduced to each other for the first time this evening. And I was just saying before I got on the show today, I didn't do many Fulham wins in my time in the hot seat, but we get one today.
You didn't, as soon as you left we seemed to pick up a bit of form. But welcome back, mate.
It's just honestly a shame you're already relegated. No, but in all seriousness, the victory, the win, how frustrating was it that happens now? It's kind of like, why couldn't we do this weeks ago? Because Everton were flying at the time.
Well, it's Fulhamish, isn't it? You know, we're Fulhamish, that was Fulhamish. Yeah. You know, it was just absolutely typical that, you know, once the shackles are off, they were going to pick up a performance and absolutely play Everton off the park as well, really.
Yeah, I think it's a bit predictable, really. I don't know, like, I feel like the main atmosphere of the game, though, wasn't like, oh, why haven't we done this for ages? It was just relief and just happiness over a win. There wasn't really much resentment towards the players about why haven't they done it. Overall, I think it's just happiness and just remembering what it feels like to win. Is it, we lost 10 in a row. It's only our second win in 2019. You know, we'll take that.
Yeah, clean sheet as well. I think the way that we shackled Everton, stopped them playing the way they like to play. You know, players like Sigurdsson and Richarlison, they were absent during the game. You know, the way we stopped them playing, the way we stopped them, you know, doing what they like to do, I thought that was really good. And like you said, if we could have done this since the start of the season and found the right balance, then, you know, maybe we wouldn't be in the position we are. But, you know, it's good to finally get a win and a clean sheet.
Just quickly, by the way, chaps, to update with the Champions League scores. I know they've all been flying in at the Etihad, 3-2 still to Manchester City. It's been an entire 10 minutes without a goal. They're being starved of action now after 5 in the opening 21 minutes. There has been a goal in the other game with Porto and Liverpool, and it has gone to the away side, to Liverpool. Sadio Mane has scored for them at 3-0. I think we can safely assume Jurgen Klopp's men will be in the Champions League semi-finals this season, maybe hoping to go one better than the final, of course, last year where they lost to Real Madrid. But on the game against Everton, was there a certain degree of Everton being particularly poor as well?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, as Cameron mentioned, they were off the back of 3 great performances, beat West Ham and Chelsea and Arsenal.
Like, yeah, they were decent 3 wins.
Yeah, exactly. Very decent. A couple of clean sheets in there as well. But I think maybe they were just on the beach. And I think, in a way, it was predictable, though. Like, it's such a cliche, isn't it? As soon as a team gets relegated, pressure's off, start playing better. Like, we saw it with Sunderland a few years ago. We saw it with Villa a few years ago. We haven't seen it with Huddersfield, but that's just for... They've just completely down
pure
tools,
incompetence,
haven't they? Yeah, it's unbelievable what's going on there. I mean, yeah, compared to us, it's looking pretty bad for them next year. But like I said, I'm just happy to get a win on the boards and get to 20 points.
I mean, in terms of the offensive players they have, like Bernard and Richarlison, we always had to watch out for them, but it was critical that we stifled them centrally as well. And with that, we played a very rigid formation. We made it very difficult for them to break through with Sigurdsson. You know, they had Idrissa Gueye out there, and who else he had next to Gueye? It was
Andre Gomes.
Andre Gomes, yeah. Of course. Oh yeah, him.
Stampede Gomes, Mr.
Stampede. Yeah, but that was critical. And our midfielders, they really stepped up to the plate, especially in my book, Anguissa. You know, he's been a shining light for us in the last couple of weeks, and he's really starting to become that £30 million player, which we thought we'd get at the beginning of the season. But that was critical, and we overloaded them, we stifled them, and that kind of acted like a springboard for us to actually attack and, you know, dictate possession in the midfield and to make it difficult for them to shackle and just close us in general. It was really promising to see.
Yeah, was it first winning six under Parker's? Has that performance been coming?
He's had some really tough games, to be fair. Like the guys we've been lining up against aren't, you know, we'd probably expect to lose them all, to be honest. So I think we saw little glimpses before, but this was probably the first time where we had a full kind of 90 minutes where we looked fairly comfortable and things were going right.
Definitely, yeah. And that was something we were guilty of even when we weren't relegated, is only playing well for a half or only playing well in spells and then not getting the breaks in those spells. I mean, even if you go back to the Everton away game, we should have been 2-0 up at half-time.
Yeah.
You know, I think Cesc, he missed a huge chance. I can't remember if he hit the bar. Yeah. But, like, way back in September or October, whenever that was, our whole season could have been different based on those moments, and it wasn't. And then, I don't know, they say, you know, you don't get any luck when you're down at the bottom. And I don't feel like we did. But now that we're gone, we might start getting some luck. I don't know.
Yes, well, I've just had the West Ham guys in the studio, and they were lamenting the referee against United, saying they didn't get the decisions. You know, the same big club mentality, top six club playing at Old Trafford, you don't get the decisions. You talk about, you know, the pressure being off yourselves. Do you think maybe with the referee as well, with Fulham being relegated, that there did just seem to be, not, I wouldn't go as far as saying a pre-season friendly, but, you know, with less pressure on the game, that it was just a generic kind of looser, happier, easier game. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, there was a feel-good factor.
Yeah.
It definitely was. You could
game
see that.
Game in the sun with kind of nothing laying on it as such.
Well, you know, win or lose, it didn't affect anything anyway.
Win or lose on the booze, is
that? Yeah, well, definitely after.
Was Don Betts there or not?
No, so, he's not.
No, he wasn't.
Lander back today, I think. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot of spotlight on referees, especially, like, you know, Warnock going on about Cardiff not getting decisions and blah, blah, blah. But I think we have been, I don't know, like maybe on the wrong side of some decisions this season. I mean, the Hernandez handball in the West Ham game springs to mind. Yeah, obviously we were winning 1-0 at the time and he punched it in to equalise. I mean, if that doesn't happen, you know, I don't know. It's just, at the end of the day, referee's decisions are final and there's no point arguing about them after the facts, really.
Until VAR comes along.
I'm very anti-VAR, as you know, George.
That's why I brought it up.
There certainly was a wry smile across the face. Champions League, little updates, 1-0 still to Liverpool, 3-0 aggregate. They will be going through to the Champions League semi-finals. Not quite so clear and cut at Etihad, 3-2 to Spurs at the moment, but they need Manchester City still another 2 goals if they are going to progress into the semi-finals. A huge, huge game going on there. Goals flying in left, right and centre. 5 goals in the first 21 minutes. Great, great stuff. This is the Fulham Fan Show here, though, on Love Sport Radio. When we get back, we'll continue to talk about Everton, what went so right.
This is Love Sport.
So, what did go so right against Everton? Individual performances. Was it Tom Kenny's first Premier League goal of the season?
His first Premier League goal for about 8 years is ridiculous.
No, because I heard somebody say it was his first ever, but he had scored for Hull back in the day against Everton.
Against Everton.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't know that fact.
So he's only ever scored against one Premier League team. But he's got two.
But it's his first goal since the playoff final. The goal that sent us into the Premier League, which is a kind of a cruel kind of irony, isn't it? Like, the first game since relegation, he scores. And the last game that got promoted, he scored in as well. Mm. I think overall, if we talk about Kearney for just 1 minute, like, I think he hasn't quite hacked it at this level, sadly. Mm. And I really thought he was going to, you know? Because he was like a class above in the Championship, even when he was on one leg in the beginning of last season. Mm. He was just by far the best midfielder in the Championship. But for various reasons, I mean, maybe he wants too much time on the ball, maybe the fact that he's so left-footed has finally come back to bite him. But either way, he hasn't quite hacked it at this level, which is such a shame. But, and again, I guess, good for us in the long run, because he might come down to the Championship and stay with us. I mean, he might get us back up.
Yeah, it really shows the difference in the league. So I remember was the start of our promotion season. He was injured, and what we were like, weren't that far off the relegation spots. And then he comes back in, and we're just, you know, at the end of the season, we're a couple of points off automatic, and a huge amount of that was down to Kearney. So, you know, it is a bit disappointing that he hasn't had it all go his way this season. I think playing, you know, if we kept in with that 4-3-3 the whole season with two more defensive midfielders behind him, you know, maybe he would have found it a bit easier. But, you know, I think we all expected a lot more from Tom Kearney.
You have though said previous weeks that Kearney has not been played in the right position.
Yeah, I mean, he's been played out on the right, especially underneath
he's
Ranieri.
He's not a winger, is he?
Thanks, Ranieri.
Yeah, well, cheers for, you know...
everything.
For everything, yeah. Sorry, Jake.
But apologise.
Sat behind Mitro, you know, he's got such a great connection with Sessegnon and Mitro, and even with Babel this season since he's come. It's a real cohesion and connection and understanding there, and we saw flashes of his underlying quality against Everton, and it was an absolute joy to see, because every time he got himself on the ball, he was aware. And, you know, he just looks so alert and so sharp. And that's exactly what you come to expect from Kearney. I mean, we saw it last season. He was instrumental and he's absolutely fantastic for us on Saturday. And, you know, there's always talk about him potentially leaving as well in the summer. Maybe you just don't know. But I really hope we keep hold of him, because he's going to be such a pivotal member of our core next season.
Yeah, I think the weird thing with Kearney, and I don't know why so many managers put him at work. So I remember... was it Blackburn? I think Blackburn we got him from, where he played really well in the centre, moved out wide.
Kit Diamond.
Clearly wasn't happy, came on.
The famous Kit Diamond.
Kit did it too. And I don't know why so many managers keep putting him out right. It clearly doesn't suit him. I don't know why, you know, what is he giving off in training to make him want to do that?
Well, that's it. I mean, especially with the players at our disposal that can play at home wide as well, it doesn't make any sense. And you've only got to look so far if, you know, his actual... Sorry, what was that?
Sorry, we were distracted in the studio.
I was going to put this out there quickly.
We have the screen going for the Man City game, and there's just a chance for Spurs.
Oh, I see. Yeah, there's a big ooh.
Yeah, sorry. In case anybody's wondering what that was, why everyone just stopped for a second. Doesn't work on radio, does it? Carry on talking.
How about this then? Ryan Babel, player of the season.
For us?
Yeah,
definitely.
Well,
yeah.
Why not? Yeah. I mean, he's come in, he's contributed like 7 or 8 goals in 12 games. And
surely Mitrovic...
No, surely. Sorry. Babel's had a huge impact since he's come. I mean Mitrovic Chambers. Does his job well.
Chambers is a lone player, so it's a little bit like...
He still counts.
Yeah,
still
he counts,
for
but...
you.
And he was rubbish at centre-back.
It's a resurgence, yeah, which is fantastic to see his development. But Babel, since he's come in, has been an absolute...
I also love him because, like, he came in and everyone, he got derided. I was like, why are you signing a 32-year-old guy with red hair? He's like a past-it winger. He played for Liverpool about 20 years ago. Like,
yeah. No, it's fair.
And everyone slated him.
He's
played so well. He's proven, like... there's a reason he's been in the Holland squad for the past few years, and will continue to be in the Holland squad.
Same Holland squad that hasn't qualified for the last two major tournaments.
But doing very well now.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
Nations League.
Playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, of course. No. It's a completely fair point. But, I mean, Van Dijk's part of that squad, and he's might win PFA Player of the Year. So, you know, but they've had some terrible managers. I think that he will definitely get himself a move to maybe an Everton. Like for like Theo Walcott.
Maybe. When we went down last time, we didn't have a player of the season. I think they agreed not to do one. So do you think we'll have one this year?
Yeah. Why don't you give it to Carlo Nash like Norwich did when they got relegated? Third choice goalkeeper hadn't played a minute. The fans like hijacked the vote and voted for the third choice goalkeeper.
I love that.
Oh, we should do that.
Something we can give it to Andre Schürrle then, potentially.
Oh, no. Give it to Fabbri.
No, but seriously.
Yes.
And you know what? And you know what? While we're on Fabbri, bring him back in. You know, Rico's not very good, let's be honest. He's...
I'm well up for that.
Yeah, bring him in.
I'm sure in previous weeks people have been raving about Rico.
He was still very flappy at the weekend, and it kind of highlights what people say about him as well. I mean, he just doesn't look all there at the moment.
Yeah, I think there's really interesting... I think we retweeted it from the Fulhamish podcast account on a Twitter account that had done basically some statistical analysis about keepers, so breaking them down into... shot stopping, distribution, and dealing from crosses and corners, and basically lots of different pieces of data coming into it and giving each keeper an outcome of those three levels.
Here we are. I've got it on the screen now.
You got it. So if you look at a combined score across those three levels,
yeah,
and sort by best to worst,
yeah,
Rico comes in what, second from bottom, does he?
Yeah.
In the league, yeah.
Who's in front of him, Fabry or
Betts? Fabry hasn't played enough games. Betts is there, kind of two thirds of the way down.
What about Hamer? Who's the worst in the league?
Neil Etheridge.
Etheridge.
Really?
Wow.
Which shocks me, Fulham, I thought he's been good.
He's been amazing. He's,
so he'll have faced a lot of shots, though.
This is what it is. So we've watched every single distribution, shot and cross in the Premier League this season, rating each according to the variety of contextual factors that matter to goalkeepers, goalkeepers' coaches and goalkeeping scouts. And Neil Etheridge is right at the very bottom.
I mean, he's not a good goalkeeper. He faces
a lot of shots.
He saved himself with a few penalty saves this year, but that's all he's done, as far as I'm concerned.
I think this what
but
shows...
Sergio Rico... so his shot-stopping is... The worst. There's not even a little blue section for his shot stopping.
I think this what shows it is really difficult to analyse goalkeepers, because take a midfielder, they do like 100 things a game, like 50, 70 passes, some dribbles, tackles, etc. Keepers will do, you know, maybe 10, 20 actions a game. Like, it's so difficult to actually analyse the keepers, especially if you don't, you know, manage to see all the games. I think for me, Fabianski is the only one that I've particularly noticed being really strong this year, but it is really difficult to.
And he's up in third.
Yeah, which kind of makes a bit of sense. But I think the only thing that this might not take into account is every time that Rico's already let in three, like against Watford, and another shot comes at him, like, is how motivated is he to stop a fourth one going in? Yeah. Like, that's the only.
He made a great save at 3-0 at Watford, though,
didn't he?
There
you go. Shot me.
Flicked around the post. Yeah.
Yeah, and he made a great save when we 3-1 down to West Ham as well. Do you remember that? When we were losing at West Ham, he made a quality save. But I don't know. But like, I always think that shot stopping is just like so basic.
Every goalkeeper,
yeah, you should be able shot
to
stopper.
Save it. It's everything else is. It's the bells and whistles.
Yeah, it's the main part of your job. Like, what separates you is, you know, commanding your box, your distribution of your feet, and things like that. I mean, but Rico is another interesting case for a different reason, in that his form has just fallen off a cliff. That's why he's an even more better case study. The fact that he won so many Europa Leagues this year, and started in the Liga for a, you know, team contesting top four, and is now just dropped off, and now he's played for a relegated Fulham and is rated the second worst goalkeeper in the league. Yeah. It's just unbelievable how that happens to a player. He's only 25 as well. Yeah. He's not even old.
He's 25?
Yeah.
Have you seen this, by the way? This rating list?
No, I haven't actually.
So, bear in mind you've not seen it then. Who do you think is top? Who do you think has been statistically the best goalkeeper?
I bet it's Alisson.
Alisson is in... fourth.
It's Joe Hart. It's going to be someone random, isn't it?
Joe Hart is towards the bottom.
Ah,
it's a big name, but not someone you'd expect.
Oh,
Kepa.
No.
It's
Kepa. Think North.
Leno.
Think North London. There we go.
Leno.
It's not Leno.
Other one.
Petacek.
Yeah.
Really? Petacek. It's top.
Petacek, then Vicente Gaita, then Lucas Fabianski, then Alisson, then Leno, then Edison, Dubravka, De Gea, Lloris, Arrizabalaga, Jonas Lerzl, Huddersfield keeper, above the likes of Ben Foster, Tom Heaton, Begovic, Schmeichel, Pickford. Very interesting. So just at GK1 Twitter account, if you want to see how your goalkeeper has done in the Premier League this season, I can exclusively reveal for you Fulham fans, Sergio Rico, second worst, apparently. But let's go back to Ryan Babel, okay? Not necessarily on him, but your shout, your claim.
I think why not, you know?
I'd agree with Guy.
You'd seriously?
Definitely.
There's not another single player who you think is more deserving of the Player of the Year over somebody who came in January.
But he's made such an impact in a failing squad. And he really has. He's been a shining light and a beacon for us going forward. And it seems every time he attacks, he's going to at least get a shot off on target or supply somebody. He's got such a great connection already. And that speaks volumes of his professionality and his calibre. So definitely.
George, bring some order back to proceedings.
I mean, there's no other
on, mate.
There's no other player that George hasn't had some kind of negative patch. I think the only player that maybe comes close is Mitrovic, but he did have a long period where he was really struggling to.
When was the last time he scored? He hasn't scored about 10 games, has he?
Yeah,
it's true.
Exactly.
And yeah, but as far as goalkeepers go, that, you know, how overworked they are, you can say, well, he's having to do much more. Well, you can say the same for strikers of not having a lot to have. If you're down there, how much has he had?
He's had chances. Away at Crystal Palace, he missed the sitter in the opening few minutes. I'm not buying that one, to be honest, because I think he has had chances. Mm. I think I remember on the Fulhamish podcast right at the beginning of the year, when Mitro scored a brace against Burnley, we predicted how many goals he'd score that year, and I said 12, and I think he's on 9 or 10 now.
Yeah,
but everyone around me, like Ben Jarman and Sammy, they're all like, yeah, 20, 16, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. I think he's done enough to get himself a move to another Premier League club and probably make us a few quid. Mm. Good for him, good for us. But he's not, you know, he's not actually stood out for a while now.
Okay, I mean, the only other guy I'd chuck in the ring, Maxime Le Marchand.
He's way down my estimation. Not that down.
He's got a good chant, that's about it.
Like, he does have a great chant.
I'm not even being considered, George.
I was relying on you there to bring something else. That's
been
what you shot
to down table. Quite
I'm
heavily.
Disappointed, there, George.
Any time I've seen him, I think he's done fairly well.
He can't jump.
He's a solid 6 out of 10 player, and that's as six good as we've had. That's as good as we've
and
had this
automatically
season.
Puts him in the top five. A 6 out of 10.
Almost as good as Cam saying, Christie had a good game away at Watford. Which is absolutely
I thought first half he was absolutely phenomenal. I did say he dropped off second half.
That was one of the worst shouts of the season, honestly.
No, I thought he was great.
One of the worst players I've seen play for Fulham in the Premier League.
Now, against Watford, justified, he was fantastic. Sorry,
he
guys, he really was.
Fantastic.
You said phenomenal.
Well, I did, but fantastic, you know, same kind of keel, you know, same kind of
Christie's
bracket,
performance
maybe.
At Crystal Palace was one of the worst individual performances I've ever seen.
Well, but this is a different game. And then he was absolutely torrid.
And then he faked injury so he could get subbed off in like the 60th
minute. And then we brought Fosu Mensah on and he did exactly the same thing.
Yeah, a fullback's been an issue for us. Tell me someone I don't know.
Well, Fosu Mensah, he tweeted, didn't he, a little while back saying, basically apologising, he's not been at his best. And, I mean, he hasn't. But he has been back in the side as of late. Is he improved at all?
No, he was.
What's wrong with Fosu Mensah? Because he looked real talent.
He was our worst player against Everton. He really was. Every time he got the ball, he just lashed at it, and he didn't really have a thought process going for him. So, you know, cheers for loving us, Timmy. But yeah,
I don't think he's a right back.
I don't know where he should fit.
Well, Manchester United fans say when he came through, he was holding midfield.
Central defensive, and he
looks like a potential world beater. And he's been moved out to fullback because he's so lightning quick, but is getting found out perhaps without the ball, or well, frankly, just being found out because he's not a right back.
Despite the fact he's quick, it takes him about 10 years to actually notice that someone's got past him. And even then, you know, it's like he's got a crank engine. You know, it takes him about 5 minutes to get back up to speed again. Then he's full tilt, and it's just so funny to watch.
He was decent at Palace, though. At Palace, right back.
I felt like he was in and out of the side at Palace, though. Mm. You know,
and then again, if you're in a Roy Hodgson side, like we saw John Pansel, if you're in a Roy Hodgson side where 4-4-2, the right midfielder's giving you a lot of support. Yeah. You can look like a world beater at right back, and then
as Wan-Bissaka has done this year, like he's been linked with moves to big clubs. Like
everyone,
I bet he'll be found out if he actually has to attack. You know,
do you mean like, defend?
No, he's really good at defending. He's made like incredible amount of tackles.
He's the top for tackles, and it's not interceptions, but duels. That's it, duels.
Yeah, like
in the Premier League defensively.
I can fully understand that, but once he has to have a bit more pressure on him to go forward and actually put crosses in, I feel like he's going to struggle.
Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Zambo Anguissa, you mentioned him earlier.
Yeah.
Improved as the season's gone on. Want him to stay next season?
Come on, leaps and bounds.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely. Have we had a most improved player this season for Fulham? You know,
across
the board, Anguissa.
Babel going to get that one as well?
He's always been class. So.
No, I'll say Angus has really taken the opportunity to prove himself under, you know, by the scruff of the neck, and he's done fantastically well.
Chambers has improved as well, though. That's probably the one good thing Ranieri did.
Yeah.
Well, no, it wasn't even him.
It was Slav.
Did it, yeah.
He played against Liverpool, didn't he?
Yeah,
in midfield.
Yeah, so I'm not even going to give Ranieri any credit for his time at Fulham. So, yeah, but I know since he's played in midfield, though, Chambers has improved a lot as well.
Yeah.
I think so. And they play really well together, Anguissa and Chambers. They work off each other quite nicely. You saw them against, they both played against Everton, right? I'm not.
Yeah, those are good.
The way they pivoted was really nicely. Whenever Anguiss would move forward, Chambers would drop back, and vice versa. So, you know, they bounce off each other quite nicely. So, if we can get someone of similar mould of Chambers next year and keep Anguissa, then I think we've got a pretty strong midfield there.
You listen to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport.
Okay, welcome back. Got another hour here on the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, joined in the studio by the chaps from the Fulhamish podcast. We've got George, Guy and Cam in the studio. Champions League updates as and when they go in is the second half in both of those games. But let's talk about Fulham. Let's talk about next season, because we are at that stage now where we have to start looking towards it. What kind of position do you think the club will be in? Because sometimes, well, all the time, when three clubs get relegated, naturally those three are usually within the favourites to go straight back up. But at the same time, it's incredibly rare, isn't it, these days, that they bounce straight back, because the club goes through a huge transition. And it's really quite hard to do that without the Premier League finance within the Championship, because you end up losing so many players. What kind of state do you think Fulham will be in? And do you think you're really going to be in a position where you can mount a serious challenge to bounce straight back?
Well, I think we're in a healthy position, actually. I mean, the club have got to, you know, understand the pressures and strains that relegation will have on a club, especially last time round. You would have thought we'd learnt a thing or two. And financially, I don't think we're going to be in too much trouble at all. I just think we, you know, we understand the Championship so well. It's not like it's been 13 years like last time we've been away from, you know, the second division at all. We have a formula that worked last time round, so it's almost a case of just reverting back to that a little bit more and just remembering exactly what we're capable of in the Championship. So I don't expect us to be in any kind of trouble at all. It's going to be a tough transition, of course it always is, because we're going to be a team that's going to be shot at once again by, you know, the other teams in the Championship. They're going to look at us as a big fish in a relatively small pond, but with a lot of contenders. So,
yeah,
got to be ready.
But looking at the other, well, we'll do Huddersfield. I was going to say Cardiff, but after last night's win, we can't be too shy. Have you seen Brighton's running, by the way?
But Cardiff's running is just as bad.
Brighton are in big trouble because of two wins in 2019. They've been an absolute free fall. But Huddersfield, you're looking at them, we slagged them off to a certain extent. They haven't been Premier League level.
No.
Yeah.
But the signing and the moves that they've made have been in preparation for the Championship. And financially, they don't need to sell anyone whatsoever. That squad and that management is already working towards that. Whereas Fulham, things stand, you don't know who your manager is going to be. And a lot of players will be leaving. They will do.
But that's the thing. I mean, Huddersfield came up last season. They had a bit of a laugh and a bubble with it, you know. They took the opportunity to have fun in the sun.
They've been preparing for the Championship since they got into the Premier League.
More or less.
They genuinely have been.
Yeah, and Fulham came up this season with the expectation of making yourself a solid, formidable Premier League club, which has sustainability for years to come, and it hasn't worked.
No.
So where do you go from that, basically?
Well, but I think financially, and not just financially, but in terms of planning and recruitment, like, we are in a so much better position than we were last time we got relegated. All the players have got clauses. We haven't got Felix McGath in charge. So that's a massive positive. And we know what to expect. Like, we've still got the same youth academy we did last time. I mean, but the overall question is, can we bounce back straight away? And the answer, I agree, I think it's going to be incredibly tough. But bear in mind, our first season in the Championship last time, we finished, what, 19th, 18th? And the season after that, we finished 20th. Like, we're going to improve on that, surely. Like, I think, you know, Stoke were favourites to come straight back up this year, and they're 16th, you know, and they've sat
Look at Villa. They've gone for it each time.
After very long times out of the second division as well. Exactly, that's right. I mean, you're going a bit complacent and blind, don't you? So,
yeah, the Championship is such a slog, you know. Like, I guess, because you mentioned Villa, they've now won 7 or 8 in a row, and they're, like, right back in the playoffs, even though they didn't have a great start to the season. So there was always an opportunity to turn it around in the Championship, but I'll be surprised if we get playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough, and I think we all expect that. I remember last time we went down, we all were kind of pretty cocky and arrogant, thinking, oh, just a little Championship, we can bounce back up, and it's a really tough league. I think it all comes down to that first transfer window. We're going to lose some of the big players, but we're going to keep some. How do we build a big enough squad around them who are on a similar wavelength and a squad big enough to manage the amount of games, because we've had it before where we've had kind of top quality players like Berbatov, like Brian Ruiz, who have been, you know, surrounded by pretty average players, and they really struggle to play the style of football that they want. You know, if they're not on the right if they're not on the same wavelength, yeah, that you can't get the most out of them. So how do you find the right balance in that regard?
I mean, so we've heard Tony Khan talk about, or rumours come out of the club about, like, how he's so keen to keep hold of the likes of Seri and Anguissa, and things like that. And I think in a way that actually puts, like, more pressure on us to bounce back straight away. Like, in a way, I think it's more healthy for everyone involved to just cut it loose, to rebuild completely from nothing, and then take the season in the championship, take that hit, and then be stronger for the year after. Yeah. That's what, like, Norwich have done this year. They took, like, they could have got rid of Farker last year. They were on some terrible runs last year,
and he's pulled it back.
I think in some ways, putting too much pressure to come straight back up straight away is going to be a bad thing.
Yeah, because that's how I feel that's been almost Tony Khan's fault, it being too ambitious. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I agree with you, Guy, that actually the problem hasn't been the ambition and the commitment. It's, well, perhaps the commitment from the players brought in, and these players, I think, you get rid of, and you cut the cloth accordingly. You buy the players suited for the championship, and then you go again, because clearly the squad harmony isn't right.
There was a glaring naivety, really, when the Khans took over, you know, especially when we were relegated. They didn't know what to expect themselves, because they didn't actually know the English game anyway. They've had to grow over that over the last couple of seasons, and coming around this time, I mean, like George said, we're going to lose some big players, but we're also going to acquire. I mean, if we can fight teams off of a very, very sharp stick for not giving us the right, you know, figures and sums for a player like Alexander Mitrovic, for example. I mean, realistically, in some kind of hypothetical sense, do you think that he could stay next season, like, at Fulham at all? Do you not think he'd give it another second crack at the whip?
I think all of Khan's comments about, you know, we can keep these players, we want to keep the players, it's purely a negotiation tactic.
Yeah.
It's just to drive more money up for them. I don't think we're in a position where we need to sell. Like, if we didn't sell any of the players, we're not going to fall into a financial black hole immediately. We don't need to sell the players, but we do need to reinvest that money in, you know, in a championship squad. So I think what he's doing is there is playing a bit of hardball. Hopefully that can drive up some of the costs, because I think with a lot of these players, because we bought so young, none of them should lose value. Some of them should gain value because they've got bigger, they've got stronger. So I think we're well in our rights to try and get a fair bit of the money back. I think if Khan came out there and said, oh, Seri's a player, we're going to try and move on, other clubs will hear that and try and poach him at a good deal.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
It's all about point. It's all about, because this is the problem that we find, is that the players often that you want to get rid of, you can't get rid of. Exactly. And the players you want to keep, you know, the likes of Sessegnon, the likes of Mitrovic and Kearney, they're the ones that may attract attention. And you're in a situation where maybe the player says, you know, can we go back to the Premier League? Or the club say, oh, 20 million quid, can we really say no to that? So this is the problem, isn't it? When you put in the situation of, yes, we know players will leave, but it's being able to ship out the ones you want to ship out.
Yeah, and apparently some of the clauses are halving the wages. Yeah, reducing the wages as much as 50%.
That's huge.
You know, which I think Seri was maybe our highest ever paid player. On like 80 grand a week or something like that.
I think
if you get relegated, it's going down to 40. I mean, he's not going to stick around when you can get that elsewhere.
I think it's going down from something like 70 million to something like 25 million in the championship or something like that. That's a huge, substantial cut.
They've got long contracts, right? I mean, everyone though, as well. Like, yeah. Seri's got a long contract. Kearney's got a long contract. I mean, Kearney's like 28, 29 now.
Yeah.
So his value's decreasing. But I think Seri's like 27, 28 as well.
Agreed. And that's why, because I remember, didn't Khan came out and said in January we got some offers from China for Seri?
Yeah.
And he, with all of the other ones, I thought it makes sense, hold on to them, we can make more money from them. But with a player like Seri, who, as much as I really rate him as a player, and I think he's really underrated, can I realistically see him staying and performing really well week out in the championship? Probably not. So then I'm a little bit confused as to why we didn't, you know, why we didn't cash in on him in January, make some instant profit. We knew we were going down anyway. You know,
you need a big squad in the championship, though, don't you? You know, like, that's the one thing that we didn't have. We didn't have a big squad of our own players. We had like 8 loan players, and you're only like 7 in the matchday squad, aren't you? So there were occasions where we were leaving out a loan player, which is exactly what the parent club don't want. But then we had to do that because we had so many, and then we had like a playing squad of like 12 at the beginning of the season, which is why we spent 100 million. Mm. So I don't know, like the recruitment worked in a sense that it got us up, the league, and the season before it got us playoffs, which Tony Khan is adamant is a success, which is debatable. But I think that the recruitment has to change in terms of the loan players especially. Yeah. And it is interesting that the negotiating position we are in,
yeah,
particularly regarding our two biggest assets, which are Mitrovic, Sessegnon. Because I think we can recoup. There are £100 million back on those two players.
I think you're right.
Okay. Yeah. I will have a few more questions regarding to recruitment, as in to who you want to keep, etc., and who you want to leave. But a yes or no to kind of round up this section. Do you think you will bounce straight back, Guy, first?
I think sadly not.
Cam?
I'm going for a no.
Yes, thank you, George. That's kind of positivity I need. Listen to the Fulham fan show here on Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport.
Got the Champions League game on the screens here in the studio. Man City just had another chance, currently leading 3-2. That goal, 4-2, would have put them through on aggregate as things stand. Spurs going through on away goals, scoring the two this evening. You what, 5 goals in the first 21 minutes? Not had any for nearly half an hour now, but I suspect there will be some more before the end of the game. What, we got 54 minutes played, is that right? God, yep. My eyes are awful. 54 yep. minutes played, 1-0 to Liverpool in the other one. So we're talking about Fulham and the prospect of the Champions League. We know it's a real one. It's happening. And we've talked about, can we bounce straight back up? George was positive. He said yes, I think. The other two said no. But what were you going to say?
Playoffs, but no.
Playoffs, but no. Okay.
I take playoffs.
Yeah.
But the Championship, I mean, it goes without saying, it is a ridiculously tough league. You know, we will say, oh, going away to Rotherham on a Tuesday night.
Give me that. Yes, yeah, love it.
But it's a cliche, but at the same time, they're not easy games. They're really quite hard. You know, they are. It's not like playing in the Premier League. And it's completely, your squad needs to be built towards that. And as we've seen with Stoke, even Swansea, they had a good squad and they play wonderful football, but it takes a huge amount of adapting, doesn't it? Aston Villa, they just have just thrown money constantly. They've still got a top half Premier League wage budget, which and they've failed twice, and they could fail again to get back to the Premier League. So it's not about having, you know, you talk about Cam saying financially it's not going to be too much of a problem, you can afford to keep some of these players, but like Seri, get rid of Seri and bring in someone like, I mean, you had Norwood, didn't you?
Norwood back in a heartbeat.
I know it sounds ridiculous. If you're in the Championship, Ollie Norwood, I think for the last 5 seasons in a row, has got to the playoffs with a side and is a guaranteed Championship performer. Would I rather have Ollie Norwood in my Championship squad or Jean-Michel Seri, someone who has courted the interest of Barcelona and been linked with Napoli? I'd probably take Norwood.
Definitely. Yeah, I'd agree with that. No, I think that Seri doesn't have the metal to compete in the Championship personally. You're completely right. You need to be a different breed of player to actually thrive in that kind of environment. So yeah, I'd cash in on Seri personally this summer and definitely lodge a bid for Norwood. And now you said it, honestly, that's fantastic.
Well, no, it was just an example.
I'd have him
Reading,
back.
Fulham, he's at Sheffield United. Who Brighton. Else has he been at?
Brighton.
Brighton, yeah. And he's just been one of those players.
He's always an unsung hero as well, that's the thing. He just does his job very, very
People
well.
People like your Rob Holst, your Billy Sharps, all these strikers and these players that, you know, get you out of the Championship. And people always try to look too far ahead, don't they? Well, actually, you know, I think Fulham, with the players that they've got, get rid of them.
We need to look to the Championship and recruit from the Championship, you know. Don't look abroad. We need to actually build a squad.
That's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen, but that's what we need to do.
We've never done that, and that model's not going to change. Give me a Ghent winger any day.
Another Cabano.
Give me a Cabano. Give me an Aita. You know, like, the premiums you get from buying from rivals in the Championship and in England, it's just, it's not worth it, is it? Like, and we've seen so many flops from Championship club. For example, Villa again, 15 million for Scott Hogan. He scored like 2 goals in like 30 games, or I think it was even more than that.
Yeah,
like as good as like the whole you need to, you know, buy what you know and you know, you need to buy players who are proven. It's not always the case, you know. Having said that, I don't know, like, Mope at Brentford is a good player. I take him. So, but he, again, he'd be really expensive.
Yeah.
So maybe not.
Yeah, I think like we've done before, the two areas we'll look at will be kind of obscure French leagues, Belgian leagues, and loan players from the Premier League. And I think that's what we'll probably end up doing again. I think from my point of view, I fully agree on the Norwood piece, although it's quite likely United did buy him, didn't they?
They did, yeah.
And it's, you know, maybe you wait there.
No, but Norwood, I didn't actually... He did a good job for us. Obviously, he got us part of promotion winning side. But I don't think he's actually that good.
Yeah, I think what I'd really like to see, especially if we keep a couple of the guys like Anguissa, who have got a bit of flair to them, some, you know, I think what players at Fulham who I've really liked in the past are those kind of unspectacular guys who just work really hard, put shift in. Ooh!
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process. From syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns, automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Aguero.
The commentary there from George. Guess who scored?
You knew that was going to happen. How do you know?
I've got a little birdie in my ear whose stream is slightly ahead of Arman here in the studio. Sergio Aguero has just scored for Manchester City after 59 minutes, which means it's 4-2 on the night, 4-3 on aggregate, which means that Man City, as things stand, we've got some fist pumps going on in and around the studio going through. I don't know why everyone hates Spurs. I want Spurs to go through. Do you dislike Spurs?
No, I want Spurs to go through as well.
Oh, no, I want City to go through.
City as well. Yeah.
But yeah.
What a game. What a game it's been. What a counter-attacking goal. Absolutely superb for Manchester City. We're just seeing a replay again now. Classic Sergio Aguero just peeling off his striker. Doesn't need to take a touch. First time, smashes it beyond Hugo Lloris.
Near post. Question marks.
Like his finish against us the other day, wasn't it?
Any time a goalkeeper gets beaten in the near post, you've got to question it.
I mean, I question Hugo Lloris anyway.
Yeah.
Is anyone else?
Where was he in the list? Where was he in the list?
That's a Sergio Rico kind of flap, isn't it?
Oh, come on.
I mean, he was mid-table. I think Gazan Eagle's above him, you know. Serious.
Gazan Eagle.
What's wrong with him?
It's really funny because, like, isn't he only signed... Because he's... Isn't, like, his mate... Like, his dad is, like, mates of Pochettino from Argentina. So that's why Poch signed him for Southampton.
I mean,
for
he's been in the Argentina squad.
And it's why he signed him for Spurs.
I remember when...
It's just because he's Argentinian. It's the only reason he played for Spurs.
I remember when Nigel Adkins was the manager of Southampton and they signed Gazan Eagle from Gillingham.
Oh, really?
He said, get this, that Gazan Eagle was the future of the football club.
Yeah.
He did.
How could a goalkeeper be the future of a club?
Quite easily.
No
think
way.
It could be. I mean... Future number one, and he's gone on to play for Spurs in Argentina. Guy, very scathing. Very scathing indeed.
He's a funny keeper, I'll give him that. And he's displaced Vorm as second choice.
I think he's
I'll take him in the Championship. You know what? I'll take him.
Yeah.
I'll take him in the
Over
Championship.
Over Sergio Rico. Well, statistically, that's according to at GK1 and their stats, he is better than Sergio Rico. It is Love Sport Radio. This is the Fulham fan show. As things stand, Manchester City going through the semi-finals of the Champions League, as are Liverpool. When we get back, we're going to discuss some more Championship sides that perhaps we need to be looking out for.
This is Love Sport.
Okay. Who? Which sides? What sides are we going to have to be wary of next season in the Championship? I mean, we can safely assume that Norwich will be going up.
Agreed.
Huddersfield will be going down, amongst three of yourselves.
Luton.
Serious?
Yeah.
I mean, they'll be in the Championship.
Yeah. I'd rather Cardiff came down for so many reasons, but one of them is that I think Brighton would be more of a threat next year in the Championship. But, I don't know, just a very quick point on Brighton either way. You mentioned them earlier. Like, having been in this position as Fulham fans before, where we had a really poor end to the season, I think Hughton needs to go either way, even if they stay up.
It happened to him at Norwich.
Yeah.
I remember when it happened that they'd been... Well, when they sacked... They sacked Chris Hughton, yeah, with six games left. I think they were 5 points clear of relegation.
And then they lost to Fulham.
But they had this horrible run of the five of the whatever.
But then they beat Chelsea away.
Yeah.
They beat Chelsea away.
But there's still to this day people say, oh, they should never have sacked Chris Hughton Norwich. But they absolutely should have done. And unfortunately, this seems to have happened with his sides before. And they have been in complete free fall. But at the same token, though, if Brighton got relegated, you probably want Chris Hughton as your manager to get you out of the Championship,
definitely.
Would you not?
Yeah, definitely.
So what do you do? Because it's a massive risk, isn't it? Do you potentially get relegated with Chris Hughton because he can't quite turn it around and can't quite do the business of the Premier League? Or do you kind of cling on and hope with, because obviously you can't sack him and then hire him and say, actually, no, we want you back now?
Well, he's hit the ceiling at Brighton, I think, either way. Like, he's a manager in the Huckabee zone, isn't he? You know, like Steve Bruce is another one of them. Arguably Mick McCarthy, but you know, like he's one of those guys. I think Brighton should cut themselves loose, say thank you and goodbye.
Yeah, I don't think making the change now makes any sense, because what could a new manager do with such a short period of time? But I agree. I think he's a fairly limited coach. He's kind of okay, and he's hit his kind of level. I think Brighton, they've got a lot of good stuff going for them. They've got an owner who's making some smart decisions. They're making smart purchases. They brought a lot of young players in who have, you know, slowly getting bedded into the squad. And I think long term, they're going to be a really good and strong mid-table Premier League team. I think now they need, you know, a really, you know, forward-thinking coach to go with it. Mm. But clearly, you know, all that depends on whether they stay next season. So I'd really love them to stay up, because I like them as a club. And for all those reasons, I dislike Cardiff. So I'd really rather Cardiff go down.
But you know, Don Betts always goes on about the game that Yeo won away at Swansea. It's the worst thing that happened to Fulham Football Club. Because it meant Yeo kept his job. And it meant that, the Carnes didn't sack him when they took over the club that summer. I think there are lots of parallels in the situation we find ourselves in now. Brighton find themselves in now to when Yeo saved his job for another 6 months because he won away at Swansea in a meaningless dead rubber. I think he had hit a ceiling there, and Hughton hit a ceiling now as well. But I think with the question of, you know, what other clubs do we need to be wary of?
I think Swansea, you know.
Yeah, I think Swansea, Stoke.
Under Graham Potter, they've really started to kick on now. It all depends if they keep hold of Daniel James, which I suspect they won't do. But they feel like they've got a great coach there, and they've needed a season just to adjust and almost take it as a free hit.
Yeah, and clubs can come from anywhere in the Championship, can't they? Like,
You've done it.
Yeah, it depends on who's, you know, doesn't go up via the playoffs this year. Because any one of those four sides... It depends on how they bounce back. I mean,
Tony Pulis will be leaving Middlesbrough. Yeah. Guaranteed he's leaving in the summer. His contract's up. They're not going to make the playoffs now, I don't think.
Yeah. Forest always look like they're going to mount a charge, but they're a joke club, so they don't.
A joke club.
But, you know, like, I mean, it depends on what clubs, if they have a hangover from the playoffs.
Are you looking forward to being back in the Championship?
I definitely.
Yeah. It's strange, though, isn't it? Because I see fans of clubs who are getting relegated from the Premier League often say this, saying, well, I'd prefer the Championship anyway. Is that just a little bit kind of sour grapes and trying to put a spin on something that clearly isn't particularly positive at the time? Because surely the Premier League is the place to be. Surely.
And that's where we'll be fighting to get back to next season.
I'm not sure it's the place to be.
But as a Fulham supporter, right, because, well, no, just as a football fan in general, ultimately, right...
That's the pinnacle, isn't it?
But ultimately, there's not a winner. Football isn't decided. Don't just end football 1 year. You know, there's never going to be a winner, okay?
It's a constant. Yeah.
Exactly. It just continues. So would you rather, as a Fulham fan, which you will be for the rest of your life, be supporting a team that wins, you know... 8-7 from 10 and just miss out on, say, the playoffs, or be in and around the playoffs every year at the Championship, or be someone who struggles at the bottom end of the Premier League?
I think the whole point is that, like, yes, the Premier League is the pinnacle, and that question there is a valid one, but for a club like Fulham, there is absolutely nothing wrong with being in the Championship. You know, that's just, as you said, football doesn't stop. Like, it's just part of being a fan of a club of our size. And so, which is why it's not a disaster, you know, and which is why it is easier to say, oh, I enjoy the Championship more, because there are things to enjoy. But, like, So in the Premier League, how many games might you win? Like 11 out of 38. And in the Championship, if you have a good season, you might win like 30 games in a season. You'd rather win 30 games in a season than 11
in a row.
Yeah, like I don't know. There are lots of positives, but I think you're right in lots of those points. If you're a club like Villa, yes, you've got to be in the Premier League. Everton, yeah, but Fulham, maybe not. We're a much smaller club, like it or not. And I think the Championship, your team is absolutely fine for us.
I think another team, you know, totally agree with what guys just said there, definitely. But, you know, just straying back to the question again, another team that, you know, a perennial bottle jobs, you know, Derby County, of course. But, you know, with Frank Lampard and Jodie Morris, you know, at the helm there, they've had a few dire, desolate spells this season, but they've actually played some very exciting football. You know, it's proven in the Carabao Cup this season that they're still a force. You know, in some respects, they can go there and they can play big games and they can actually outplay the Giants. I mean, next season, maybe we'll see a different Derby County under those two because, you know, Jodie Morris, Chelsea, especially with the youth squads, he was formidable and he got them playing some absolute top football and working alongside Frank Lampard, who's basically won everything in the game. And also the connections they have with Chelsea and other clubs around that can feed them players like Mason Mount this season as well. He's been absolutely fantastic and superb for them. I just feel that they've got themselves in a much more of a better stead. And this season it may not work out for them, but there's a blueprint being set in place definitely for next year.
Well, I don't know about... Can I talk about expected goals? I'm going to talk about expected goals. They're overperforming compared to their expected numbers. Derby. So they're not actually creating that many good chances, and they're actually conceding a fair amount of few good chances as well. So normally when you look at that kind of thing, you think, okay, if it's going to happen over a long period of time, they're likely to decline a bit. Mm. But clearly in the transfer window, if they can pick up the right kind of players, you know, get some quality in from Chelsea on loan, maybe they can turn that around. I think from my point of view, the really interesting one, there's Brentford, who are a team who have... Their expected numbers for the last like two or three seasons have been really, really good. They've just either, like last season, they couldn't put the ball in the back of the net, and that's what stopped them pushing into playoffs. And this season, they're leaking goals left, right and centre. And if they perform as well as the numbers suggest they should be doing, they're a top three, top four Championship side.
Yeah. Mm.
Which, considering how, you know, the size of their club and how little budget they have, is pretty amazing. So if there's one team that I've kind of always got a bit of an eye on, as Brentford. Much as I hate to say it as a Fulham fan, is Brentford.
One thing I've not asked in preparation for the Championship is Scotty Parker. What's the thoughts?
Well, I think that tells you everything, doesn't it? The fact that you haven't even asked shows that he's just not on our plans as fans. Not on our thoughts, rather. We can't plan anything. but he's just not part of the equation for us.
In what sense? How can he not be? You don't want him or it's a foregone conclusion? You don't want him?
Don't want him.
But that, I feel like that has changed. I feel that, I mean, I've obviously not been sat here over previous weeks, but the impression that I got was when Scott Parker got the job was that he was going to be given every opportunity to keep it, and that clearly he was taking over a club that was going to be already relegated anyway, so he didn't have, you know, a thankless task, you know, basically. So you're saying in the time that he's been in charge, you've not seen enough from him to you think he credits and warrants taking the job on a full-time basis?
I'm still sat on the fence, really. I mean, I'd like him to stay at a club, maybe in a secondary role, so he can carry on his education as a coach and a manager. But in that division, you kind of need somebody that's going to bring a little bit extra, you know, because he's been at the club for so long now and he's kind of just adhering to, you know, the structure which was already implemented before. We need someone just to mix it up a little bit more from an outside perspective anyway.
George?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think since he's taken over, he's had some tough games, he's had some kind of middle of the road games, and I think he's certainly the result against Everton was definitely a plus point from his point of view. You know, got a good result there, tactically went quite well, but you know, it's a bit mixed really so far.
Fernando Llorente is just, I'm not sure how, but it's hit him and it's gone in. Spurs are now going through, despite the fact they're losing 4-3 on aggregate this evening in what has to have been one of the best Champions League games, well, frankly, in memory. It's 4-3 to Spurs on the evening, 4-all on aggregate. But
4-3 to City on the evening.
Sorry, It's too many goals to keep up with. Strikes four again. All on aggregate. Numbers. I'm not good with numbers. But the thing you need to know is, as things stand, Spurs are going through. We're just seeing the replay here. It flicks off basically everyone and just hits
his hip.
It hits a jumping Llorente and it has found its way into the back of
that's
the net.
That's
not a handball. That is not a handball. That's not a handball.
No, that's
at
a handball.
All.
I'm going to be one of those awkward fans. That's a handball.
I think VAR is checking it.
Well, oh, whilst VAR check it, we'll take a break and we'll come back in just a few moments. And when we do come back, we're going to turn our attentions back to the Premier League and talk about your next game, which is against Bournemouth. Tony Maycock from
This is Love Sport.
From the Cherries Trust is going to be joining us on the phone. Right, we have been watching the screen throughout this entirety of the break. Fernando Llorente, right, just to describe it, it was a corner. It's flicked off a couple of people's heads.
Given it.
As Fernando Llorente has jumped, it's kind of hit his thigh and his arm at the same time. By no means a deliberate act. And Kevin Friend, I believe, is the referee.
No, it's not.
Was it not?
No,
was it not?
It's the Turkish guy.
It's the Turkish guy. They look very similar. I told you my eyes weren't great. Looks like Kevin Friend from this angle. Anyway, the referee studied the screen for a good few minutes, but the goal has been given, I think rightly so.
Yeah.
So as things stand, Spurs are going through to the Champions League semi-finals, but still 15 minutes left to play. Wow. Let's talk about Fulham again. Let's look ahead to Premier League game. You're against Bournemouth up next. Tony Maycock, chair of the Cherries Trust, joins us on the phone now. Tony, a very good evening. You're not watching this game by any chance, are you?
I've just turned it over, actually. I was watching the Liverpool game.
Why are you watching that one for? Do you have any idea what you're missing out on?
Old habits die hard. Actually, ironically, the result of this game has a direct effect on our league game against Tottenham on the Bank Holiday Monday.
Okay. Well, I'll let you off then. Let's talk about your season, Bournemouth. A good one?
That remains to be seen. We're on target currently, or a good chance of getting a highest ever points total, which I guess would make it a good season. But where it started well, it's had a very poor mid-season, and it's just hopefully picking up in the last few games with the running that we've got.
Yeah, obviously, I've seen with Bournemouth at a stretch, for a stretch of the season, you guys were pretty much untouchable, and then, especially recently, maybe the Brighton game aside, it's been much more difficult. From your point of view, does it make it quite frustrating as a fan that it seems to be either one way or the other, and maybe a lack of consistency?
Yeah, I think the middle third of the season was really tough. From about the start of December, we were basically playing one of the top six sides near enough every other game, and because of the stop start of that, the way that we play, we tend to get beaten by these. Because we play football, we've tended to go head-to-head, which invariably results in us losing. But because of that, we couldn't get into any sort of form against the sides more or less around us. And we had a couple of draws, some poor defeats, so nothing really got going. And I think last Saturday was our second away win out of 13, and we'd lost all the others. So it's been quite a frustrating middle third of the season after the start that we had.
Any frustrations ever with Eddie Howe, Tony? Ever think to know what maybe he's taken us as far as he can?
Personally, no. I think.
Do you get frustrated though with people who do say that?
Yes, there are some fans that have questioned whether he's gone as far as we can, and I think no disrespect to those, but because of the journey that we've been on with him, these tend to be, and it's not just our club that have picked up these, but any club that's new to the Premier League. You pick up a new band of fans that think that if you're not performing and you're not pushing for those European slots, then it's not going very well. And when you've obviously been on the run that we have, some people question whether he's the right man for the job. And I think ultimately the only person that you could will be able to answer if he's taken it as far as he can will be Eddie Howe. And hopefully he's going to be with us for a while.
I remember hearing that when you lost at home to Burnley a few weeks ago, weren't there some boos going on in that game?
I think the boos were aimed more at the referee.
Really? That's interesting. Yeah, because I heard, Begovic had a shock of that game.
Begovic did have a shock of that game.
I want to ask about that goalkeeper situation. What is actually going on? Because Boric is ancient, isn't he?
And 39.
But Begovic is rubbish. So what do you do?
That's another question, isn't it? What do you do? Boritz was given a run for a mid-January time, I think, which was Eddie claimed that it was about Boritz been training really, really well. There were rumours that he'd had a fallout with Begovic as a result of that. And then after, sort of again, it was a run of games where we weren't particularly picking up many points, and then switched back to Begovic against Leicester. I think Leicester's second goal, which was Vardy's header, you would question Begovic's positioning on that one, that he kind of basically waved the ball into the net by just jumping out the ball. And against Burnley, the first and the third goals were, you would consider, you'd put down to poor goalkeeping, but it was more than just those two saves, or missed saves, should I say. His ball play from goal kicks and what have you was panicking, making poor decisions. And I think we had four or five goal kicks or free kicks from in the box that we had to retake because the ball didn't get out of the box. And that's a sign that the decision making is bad, because the players are under pressure and they've had to step in. So he left a really uneasy feeling with all the fans after that game.
I just want to look ahead to the weekend, if we may. Obviously, you're coming off the back of an absolute... you dropped Brighton at the Amex, of course. I mean, we all saw it. It was a fantastic game and a spectacle for everybody. The players at your disposal, I mean, Ryan Fraser and Brooks, especially for me, are absolute standouts. I mean, for us this season, and especially along the channels, we've been so porous and fragile. I mean, do you think that's one area, like it was at Craven Cottage, that you can definitely exploit? And who else do you think that we really need to be keeping tabs on at the Vitality at the weekend?
You've highlighted two of our wide players. Obviously, Fraser and Wilson have combined for what's heading to be a record haul within the Premier League of combined goals. Obviously, Wilson's come into the England squad this season, which has been great, not just for him, but for the club as well. He is dynamic in and around the box. You give him the ball, give him an opportunity, and he more often than not is going to make the keeper work or stick it in the net, so he's obviously one to look out for. More importantly for us, which is a bit of an unsung hero in my eyes, is Josh King. He will bully and bash your defenders around. You'll struggle to get the ball off him, and he can create so much with his movement as well. Obviously, then you've got the wide players of Brooks and Fraser, who you've already mentioned. But more importantly, from the game on Saturday, which seems to have gone and missed a bit, is the return of Steve Cook, who's just brought some stability back to defence, command and leadership on the pitch. And with that, it gives a really solid platform to get forward with, to move the ball around. And what we will do, which we haven't done in years, and we did it against you at Craven Cottage, but more importantly against Watford, is we will soak up some pressure and we've got the ability to defend, and we will attack quickly and get you at pace.
Tony, on those wide players you mentioned, sorry, Ryan Fraser and David Brooks, I was just trying to kind of think it in my mind that, you know, as impressive as Bournemouth has been over the last few years, I think what's kind of maybe separated them from other sides outside of the top six is some of their top talents, pardon the pun, haven't been cherry-picked away from the club. Could this potentially be the first season you've got summer coming up, a genuine fight to keep hold of the likes of, you know, Brooks, Fraser, Nathan Aki, Callum Wilson, that perhaps you haven't had to face over previous summers?
I think if you look, I think Brooks, this is his first season in the Premier League, so my thinking is that he will at least stay for another season, because he's still developing, and I think it's Eddie Howe is a coach that will improve you as a player. Callum Wilson has had a lot of injury time in his time in the Premier League, and I think that there's still a lot for him to develop. Whether someone will take a punt, he was linked with Chelsea in a January window, and it would have taken a lot of money to take him off our books at that point. And the two that I'm most worried about are now Fraser and Ake, because they've been around with us for a couple of years, so they are good enough to take a step to another level. I think Ake we would struggle to replace, although Chris Mepham's just come in from Brentford, who's really stepped in really well. He came in and then Steve Cook got injured, so he's a real baptism of fire, which that he's suddenly gone from being a good Championship defender to having to find his feet in the Premier League. And that Burnley game was a real real steep learning curve for him. And really, Ashley Barnes and Chris Wood really worked him over in that game, which has been great, which was great for him from an educational purpose, but it didn't help us as a team. And obviously Ake, a lot has been said about him. He's his potential, and he's one that I worry would obviously move to a top six side, a Champions League side. And obviously Fraser's been linked with Arsenal, so yeah. We don't know. You cannot stand in his way. Excuse me. You just can't stop players that want to go to the higher clubs.
Just going to say, thinking, you know, maybe on the other hand, so potential transfer incomings over the summer. You know, clearly Bournemouth have got a really strong core to the squad, and you know, your first 11, they're definitely, you know, the impression I get is they're all singing off the same hymn sheet. You know, they're all playing football a similar way, which has been ingrained into them. You know, some of the previous signings that Bournemouth have had, particularly spending a fair bit of money on, you know, some young English talent, maybe have struggled to really hit the ground running. You know, when you think about this summertime, are you wanting to see, you know, potentially some big names coming in? Would you rather more time was devoted to some academy prospects? You know, what are your thoughts of how the team might evolve in the next kind of next year or so?
I think it will continue to evolve as it has done in terms of generally younger players coming in. The reality is we don't have the money to buy big names. The same as every other club outside the top six is that even now the TV money is spent. The money that being in the Premier League is worth, what, £150 million or close to that, but we spent, was it about £35 million in the summer last year? Then you've got the wages on top of that. We've got a wage bill in excess, I think, of £100 million. When you look at that, it doesn't give you scope to bring in big players. This year, we've been unfortunate that Lewis Cook, who had broken into the England squad, got injured for a long time. He's obviously a youngster that was brought in. Obviously, we've had a couple of signings that haven't worked to date. Jordan Ibe hasn't taken off, but the reality is, like, we spent £15 million on Jordan Ibe, we spent £19 million on Solanke in January, it was £10 to £12 million on Mepham. That's the price you have to pay, and you get two or three of those, and that's your transfer budget gone. And we're in the same market as a large amount of the Premier League clubs. That the money, it sounds great, but because of players' wages and the high cost of transfer fees, you can't go shopping at the top table.
No. So just lastly, Tony, ahead of the game then this weekend, let's get a score prediction from you as Fulham head to your place.
I've got two thoughts on this one. If we play like we did for a while of almost being on the beach and always, then Fulham, I could see getting a result out of it. If we play like we did against Brighton, I would see probably a similar 3-0 like we saw at Craven Cottage.
Okay, well, Tony, thank you very much indeed for your time this evening. Good luck for the rest of the season. Hopefully you can get your highest points tally of it. That was Tony Maycock from the Cherries Trust giving us his views from the Bournemouth side of it ahead of that game against Fulham this coming weekend. We've got about 10 minutes left of the show this evening. We'll get the chaps' views in the studios up next season.
This.
Welcome back to the Fulham Fan Show here. Last, few minutes of normal time in these Champions League games this evening, and they've both been absolute crackers. Man City leading 4-3 on the night, but it's 4 on aggregate. Spurs going through as things stand. In the other game, Liverpool, well, it was kind of already half done, wasn't it, going into the game this evening? Well, they're 4-1 winners on the evening, again going into injury time in Porto. Sadio Mane, Mo Salah, Roberto Firmino and Virgil van Dijk scoring the goals for Jurgen Klopp's side. And we're just discussing it in the studio. If Liverpool win, well, they win, they've got Barcelona, correct?
Yeah.
And this winner between Spurs and Manchester City will play Ajax. And we're just discussing kind of, on a Spurs perspective, just kind of looking from our London club focus, if Spurs were to get against Ajax, would they be favourites? Do you know what? I'm not too sure after Ajax knocking out Juventus and Real Madrid, but they'd certainly have a chance. And then off the flip side, Liverpool against Barcelona, if Spurs were to find themselves in the final against Barcelona, I think many wouldn't give them much of a chance. But if it was Liverpool, Spurs would give a semi-chance, which kind of just feels unbelievable to say, isn't it? I mean, I don't want to kind of get ahead of myself here because there could still be another goal. But, I mean, magnificent from Spurs, isn't it? With so many question marks asked against them.
Yeah, and I guess the main headline is without Harry Kane as well.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I think that... Yeah, they've. I don't know, but like it's difficult because of the away goals, though. Like, have they actually deserved to go through? I mean, they're losing 4-3. I don't know. Like, you said City have bottled it, but I don't think they have bottled it. They've scored four goals, you know. Like, the only reason I say bottled it
is because obviously the talk of the quadruple and the stats now, isn't it, of the amount of semi finals that Pep Guardiola has lost in the Champions League. That's now starting to count against them. You know, we talk about Spurs' inability to get over the line. Well, yeah. Question marks now have to be asked of Pep with regards to the Champions League. He's not won it, I don't think, since... Well, it's, I think it's 8 years ago since, he won it with Barcelona.
Since he had Messi, yeah. Basically.
Well,
I don't
know. Fair point. So, look, we were talking to Tony about this Bournemouth game this coming weekend. I mean, how much focus, be honest, have you had on it?
Well, I know there's going to be inflatables going down too.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah, inflatables and colourful shirts. So there is a party atmosphere, definitely. I mean, that's about as much focus as which the Fulham fans themselves have actually been, you know, investing into the game. Apart from that, just try and carry a little bit of momentum into it after the Everton win. That's all we can hope for.
Needs to get an away point, Cam. We need to get one more away point to avoid Derby's records.
Okay.
We've only got two away points. Out of 15 games so far, 16.
That's not great, is it?
It's not good at all. Where was that point?
It was away
at Newcastle, and then it was away at who else was it? I can't remember who the other away point was. But I remember we got a clean sheet away at Newcastle.
Yeah,
and they were the only. And then Arsenal got a clean sheet on Monday night, and that was their first clean sheet of the season, and it's unbelievable. And here's Aguero, Sterling.
I cannot believe it.
Unreal.
I really have spoken too soon. Manchester City.
Is that a hat-trick for Sterling as well?
Raheem Sterling.
That's a Stokes hat-trick.
Has just scored in the 93rd minute of 95.
Unbelievable.
That's superlative.
Absolute heartbreak for Spurs. Absolute heartbreak. But what scenes at the Etihad, and what a game. 5-3. I mean, I did speak too soon, didn't I? I really did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so happy for Raheem Sterling. Everything he's gone through, you know, the media barrage he constantly gets for no good reason, the, you know, racist abuse that he gets to score what looks like to be the winner of the Champions League quarter. Oh, no, not VAR. Hate VAR.
Potentially, they're just seeing Sergio Aguero, if he was offside in the build-up to it. I'm not sure he is.
It's VAR.
Oh, my word. It has been VAR'd. And I think, I just need confirmation here, I think it may be ruled out. The referee who is not Kevin Friend, but from a distance, if you're blind,
disallowed it.
And no goal. Sergio Aguero was offside. This game has literally had everything. So, that is how close this game is. Now, Spurs are through, and they've got less than a minute to hold on. This has been one of the most incredible games I think I've ever been watching in my life.
It's really funny on City, actually.
Bottled it, didn't they?
Yeah.
Wow. Absolutely wow. You're just seeing pictures of the Spurs fans now in the stands, just hands in head.
Yeah.
We were all lost for words, aren't we?
Do we even talk about Fulham anymore?
No.
Guardiola like sprinted down the touchline celebrating. Yeah.
On the VAR question, this was always the thing. Like, what if VAR is, you know, involved in such a late decision, an important decision? What happens? I think we've just seen it here. I mean, what?
Yeah, that's critical.
Yeah, well, that is how important it is. You know, that was literally that decision, that offside, was the deciding factor between Manchester City and Spurs being the Champions League Semi-final.
How much time is added on now? Like, as well,
must be another minute at least.
I mean, it looked tight as well. The offside. I initially didn't think he was, but the referee didn't take very long to come to a decision, which would perhaps suggest that it was fairly.
He didn't even look at it.
Someone told him he was offside. By the looks of things, it didn't take a lot of deliberation, unlike the handball decision earlier on. And so we are now 95 minutes. They've all been played. They added on five. Man City do have the ball as things stand, just obviously throwing the ball into the area, hoping to get something from it. But Spurs clear the ball. I imagine that should be about it. But the referee is still We're waiting. I mean, obviously, time is going to be added on because of that drama of the VAR. So how far they go on now with this game, we'll just have to wait and see. But they are still playing. See my screen into the 97th minute now. There's only 5 minutes added on. Man City pumping the ball into the area. Spurs heading it clear. Just need to stay onto the ball now. Dele Alli just needs to run to the corner. Just needs to run to the corner, and Spurs will be in the Champions League semi-finals. Just absolutely incredible scenes. I mean, you talk about Manchester City on that day when scoring against QPR, and Spurs on the attack now. You know, do you remember when Manchester United were at Sunderland and they'd won and they thought they'd won the Premier League title? Then Manchester City went and scored through Sergio Aguero. Honestly, reminiscent of that in regards of the scenes as that goal went in for Manchester City, only to see it ruled out, the emotions from Pep Guardiola, and then to see the utter relief on Pochettino and the Spurs fans' faces. And I think the game is finished. We're just waiting for confirmation now. Spurs have got the ball in the corner. It is full time. It is full time at the Etihad Stadium. One of the most incredible games I've ever witnessed. Spurs are going to be in the Champions League semi-finals, where they will play Ajax. In the other Champions League semi-final, it will be Barcelona against Liverpool. Liverpool have progressed after winning 6-1. And I'm afraid this was the Fulham fan show, but Spurs have taken over things, and rightly so. What an incredible evening for them. This has been Love Sport Radio. This has been the Fulham fan show. Do stay with us in a few moments. We're going to get your news here.
Is Love Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.